Welcome to the Detroit Lions News Show, your number one source for Detroit Lions news.
But when I see Dan Campbell handling the clock the way he has over the last 3 years, same shit with fourth down going for it, admitting after the game that, yeah, you know what, our defense played pretty well, but, you know, we put them in bad spots. Whose fucking fault is that, buddy?
That's a turnover. I'm sorry, especially in your own freaking side. Don't play that way, Dan. I hope you're listening. Don't coach that way.
So Darcy's on with us pre-show, talking about how he's ready for the pending booking.
Yeah, you got to continue to do the work. You know, there is a lot of hype and there is a lot of the media involved now.
And Jahmyr Gibbs, guys, you're going to fall in love with him because Goff's going to find him in the slot. He's going to get a lot of screen passes.
I've been following the Lions. I mean, that's my team, man. I mean, you know, they're the team that drafted me and gave me a chance to play. You know, play the NFL.
Finally talking Lions in the playoffs. We got the Stafford angle, the Aaron Donald angle. We didn't draft Aaron Donald. We took Eric Ebron. Like, I want no part of that.
No. Detroit fan. Hey, I got my jersey right here. Got my helmet right there. Let's get it cheering, man. Good time for y'all to start cheering right now.
Super Bowl.
That's right.
Let's go. Here we guys are. The guys are here 2 weeks out from the NFL draft. We got the crew assembled. It's going to be a good talk, getting a sense with everybody regarding where this football team is at with the draft, what they're hearing, all the cornerbacks that are coming to town. Looking forward to catching up with everybody, seeing where they're at, what they're liking with Walt, Joe, Kurt. Everybody's here. We got the crew. I'm looking forward to the conversation. Definitely going to hit on the draft, what we're looking at in the first round, probably some sleepers that potentially could make this football team better. And that's the name of the game. This football team is poised to add talent to a roster that has starters all over the place. And yeah, they have a lot of needs. They have areas of depth that they need to address, and they're going to do that. What everybody's excited about and relaxed about, everybody sitting pretty, sitting confident about this football team, is because Brad Holmes has done the work in his first three drafts in free agency to put together a playoff roster. Now, the key is going to be taking and moving this football team to the next level. And that's going to be the challenge with this draft, is that you got to find players that have the potential to contribute this year in a deep playoff run. But also, there are going to be a couple picks like Broderick Martin that are going to be stashed away and not see the field and develop. And I see more of the same from Brad Holmes. And I think everybody can sit here and feel confident heading into the draft. So we'll start with that. Where's everybody's mindset going into the draft? I know I'm relaxed. Everybody's looking at now big boards, looking at talent at different positions. And today is a national holiday for all the draft nerds because The Beast came out. If you're a subscriber of The Athletic, Dane Brugler is a wild man. 18 months to fill in all the positions out. I'm talking about every piece of information that you probably need for the draft is there in one spot. And it's a great resource for everybody that wants to pay attention to the draft. But I'm sitting comfortable. I'm excited regarding what the Lions can do. Outside of shock, another running back or quarterback, I'm comfortable with whatever Brad Holmes decides, whether it be cornerback, whether it be offensive lineman, wide receiver, if they can get a lucky one of the top edge rushers, whatever Brad Holmes decides to do, trade up, trade down, within the framework of this football team, you understand there's a reason, and he's earned the benefit of the doubt that, hey, he's going to do the job and make this football team better. Kurt, where are you standing with this football team? Now, 2 weeks from the draft, we're right around the corner in Detroit. The NFL draft is coming.
Well, I had to say, pretty like it's relaxing. I'm not like really stressed about the draft. Like you said, one thing I would say, it's the Lions can do whatever they want to do. Best player available. They can fill some needs. The one thing, like you said, with Broderick Martin, you're going to have some guys that's going to get drafted by Detroit that's not going to see the field or in a limited capacity. If you look at the depth of the roster at the top of it, you have a lot of roster spots that are filled. You don't have a lot of needs at starting positions. You can do whatever you want to do. You can rebuild the offensive line. You can find a guy that's going to be a starter and sit behind a guy like a Taylor Decker or a Graham Glasgow or a Zeitler. You can find a guy that's going to sit behind the couple of safeties that we have with Ify and Kirby Joseph, excuse me. Or, you know, you can go up and get that corner that you're going to be looking at the end of that first round. We got all of them coming into town right now. Seems like all the top corners are making a visit to Detroit. So, I mean, and you have the CD3 and you have a Meek. So what are you going to do with those guys? Somebody's not going to be starting in Detroit. Whoever we have, it might be a area where Brad Holmes may be looking at moving up the draft a guy, because some of the guys in those later rounds and those picks aren't going to make the team. So why you waste that pick and go up and trade it and get somebody you may be looking for to pick up in the first round of the draft?
Yeah, I agree. I think currently they have the ability to do pretty much whatever they want, go in any direction they choose. They invested, I thought, at least I felt now looking back on it, at that point in time, I didn't really agree with it for the first couple days. But now that I look at it, Carlton Davis and Meek Robertson, those guys are two complete upgrades to the secondary of what we had last year. Now, are they big-time players? Maybe not, but they are complete upgrades over what we had. So you have to be happy with that moving forward. And it leaves a lot of flexibility in draft, considering the fact that we could still go corner, because I believe corner is still a need. Edge rusher, D-tackle, linebacker, pass rushing linebacker, if you choose to go with a guy like that for different scheme sets, wide receiver. There's a lot of different directions they could go. They could also trade back and package up some picks, get more offensive line help. If they have a couple guys on the interior, the defensive line that they really like, they could double down, get both of those. Chicago did it a year ago, matter of fact, with two of the nose tackles that they drafted, one from Florida and one from South Carolina, I believe. So they've got a lot of different directions they could go in. Also, I think something people haven't really talked about a lot around here is there's a lot of elite talent in this draft. I've already started on 2025. 2025 is kind of lean right now, I think, as far as the high-end talent. Leaner than anything I believe we've seen over the past 10 years. Like, usually the upcoming summer, you've got about a good 15 to 20 names that you already know, concrete guys that could have been first-round picks the prior year, chose to go back. There's not a lot of that right now. If you look at a guy like maybe Harold Perkins from LSU, there's no offensive tackle from Texas whose name kind of slips my mind right now. But then the quarterback position, that's what I'm glad we're not looking for a quarterback, because quarterback gets kind of lean next year. And we have Jared Goff. He may not be everyone's cup of tea, but he's one of the top quarterbacks in the league right now. He's perfect for us heading into year four in the same exact offense. So you can't expect him to do anything but continue to ascend. But like I said, 2025 is a situation where we could say, screw the picks. Let's say they want to move up and get somebody. You can obviously do it. You can keep pick 29. If you want a guy bad enough, say it's an edge rusher or it's a corner, a guy like Quinyon Mitchell, a Dallas Turner, whatever, this team could possibly look at this draft and say, you know what, we're going to go for the fences. We're going to get two elite players in the first round. If we only end up with four or five picks in this draft, so be it. To me, it's about quality, not quantity. And if we can get two potential cornerstone players in a corner, and an edge rusher or a corner and a D tackle, however you want to put it, this is a team moving forward that's probably set up to win from years 6 through 10 now.
Yeah, I agree with you with what you all said. I think that this is going to be an interesting draft because I really don't think that they're going to stay at 29. Either they're going to move back or they're going to move forward. I kind of have an inkling that they are going to trade up, though. That's my opinion. I think that if there's two positions, I think that they're going to go in the first round. I think you could potentially see, I think wide receiver is definitely on the board and cornerback is definitely on the board. I mean, if you got to think about it this way. Buffalo, just they have no wide receivers right now. So if you're trying to get a wide receiver, you got to get in front of Buffalo. And then, and if you want a cornerback, a good cornerback, you're probably going to have to jump some people because there's going to be a lot of people looking for corners. So, I mean, it's kind of like, what would you rather do? But like Walt said, this is – the next year's draft is kind of lean. I mean, Quinn Ewers is coming up. Don't hurt him, my boy. But that draft is going to suck. So if he trades a first-round pick for next year, I mean, that's potential too because I think that this draft mm-hmm. is –
And you expect to be picking somewhere between 27 and 32, hopefully, again, if you're Detroit. So what the hell does it really matter? Exactly.
It doesn't matter. Yeah. So.
Your first round is essentially a second rounder anyway. If you're picking, you know, he got that less, you know, he comes from that less need, you know, school of drafting, you know what I'm saying, where that end of the first round, F them picks. They trade in those first round picks because they're – basically a second round pick anyway. So
do you think he would use that to go get like a guy like let's say like after the draft he uses that first round pick for Marshon Lattimore? Because I think that's totally on the table. Because if you look at the Lattimore's contract breakdown, he can't be traded before June 1st because I think it's like a $30 million cap hit for the Saints. But after that it goes down after June 1st, it goes down to like I think it's like $9 million for the Saints. And they need to shed some payroll. And that's one of the guys that's been mentioned. I was listening to some New Orleans people talk, and they were like, yeah, Lattimore is going to be gone. Someone's going to be gone that's a high-priced guy. And they keep mentioning Detroit as the guy, the team that's going to get Lattimore because Aaron Glenn knows him. Dan Campbell knows him. There was someone else that knows him too. So that's kind of like why I'm getting that gist of Lattimore. So I could see where they – if it's in the first round and they say, okay – we expect to go get Lattimore. I could see them saying, all right, well, let's go get Brian Thomas from LSU. Or, you know, because I think that if you wait too long, because you see Buffalo is ahead of you, and they have no wide receivers right now. Gabe Davis went to Jacksonville. Stephon Diggs went to Houston, him and his, you know, his pouting ass. And everyone, you know, so they don't have anybody. They have two tight ends that are good, and they don't have no wide receivers. Shakir is kind of good, but he's not going to scare you.
Well, I have a quick question about that. Like, is offensive line on the board twice? Because if you look at the current situation right now, we're going to eventually need Frank's replacement. You know, he's in a situation, he's Calvin Johnson now. He's not going to practice at all. He's going to show up and he's going to be all pro on Sundays. How much longer does Frank really want to put his body through that? We're going to probably eventually need a new left tackle if you intend on keeping Panay at right tackle, which I think is probably the smart thing to do. Even though he's great enough to do either. And you're going to eventually need another left tackle. Zeitler's a serious vet. Glasgow's a vet. Sourcedal, you're hoping that Sourcedal becomes one of those late round diamonds that becomes something. But we could use a couple of young infusions of blood on that offensive line. And I was talking to someone the other day about Jaxson Powers-Johnson and how I'm not buying like the top 15 hype behind it because typically they just don't respect centers that much. I believe he could fall because if we look at the past, what, three or four centers, I believe, that have all been drafted in the first round, wasn't Frank like the highest drafted one out of all of them? Because the guy Kelly from the Colts, I believe, was, I think, between 17 and 23, if I'm not mistaken. These are all turned out to be great players. But for whatever reason, the NFL, they just don't respect them like that. So there's a possibility a guy like Powers Johnson could fall to 29. I absolutely believe he's on the board. And I could see them with the way the skill position guys, the receivers, as deep as that class is, as deep as the defensive backs class is, safety and corner overall, we could find ourselves with our pick of the number one center and number one guard in this class. And that's going to be really hard to turn down.
No doubt. And on my latest podcast, that's what I said was, I thought that when you look at what's going on with the offensive line, the depth too, the international player, Max Purcher signed with the Seahawks. So you don't have a lot of depth in regards to the offensive line. You got Dan Skipper, Abel Sika, you have opportunities for younger guys and you have Kobe Sourcedal. But in terms of starting caliber talent, I think too, the Duke player, Graham Barton, is a guy that's been mocked in a lot of mock drafts. So if he's there, he's also on the board and is a good player. So to me, I could see two offensive linemen in this draft because you have three, literally. And I think that that is a little bit of my only concern outside of cornerback this year is you got three offensive linemen in their 30s and Frank Ragnow, who is basically day to day in regards to the maintenance of his foot injury. Now, he's been reliable and he's been out there, but you don't know how much that's going to respond all throughout the year. And many people are saying maybe 2024 could be his last year. Now, you look at that offensive line, it's solid, and it kind of has the win now feel of a unit that is going to be counted upon with Ben Johnson, potentially maybe his last year as well. So offensive line definitely is on the board. Powers Johnson maybe is the player if Joe's right and they move up. Mm-hmm. That's would be an interesting reaction to see how the fans would react to trade up for a lineman. So listen, it's a key position, and you see what Mr. Wiggins has to say. He says the concrete won't get solid if you keep adding water. Foundation is first, and Brad Holmes has been shown to really respect the trenches and go there. So it's going to be real interesting. That's what is going to be interesting to see is what if a couple players are in that same boat. So in my mind, all right. So I'll put it to the group. If you have Darius Robinson there, the edge, the talented edge rusher available who's been in town for a top 30 visit, or you have Graham Barton or Powers Johnson, you have a choice between a lineman or an edge rusher. Where do you go in terms of Brad Holmes selection? What would you prioritize between those two positions?
To be honest with you, I probably would go Powers Johnson, just to be honest with you. I want that cornerstone piece that can replace one of the guys that we have now. But there is talent, you know, for offensive linemen. This is not a light draft for them. It's some mid to late round guys that you can look at. One of the guys I was looking at was one of the Frank Ragnow's alma mater, was that Bo Limer, the center slash guard. I mean, you have some guys that you can get mid to late rounds, but I like that. I like the cornerstone, and this could be a draft where you can rebuild the offensive line, where you can add depth, and then once the older guys, the vets, start to matriculate out, you can just push those guys up and have them start.
Yeah, I agree. I personally would go Powers Johnson as well. I just think he's that elite of a prospect. And when you compare the fact that you need center help, interior offensive line help, as well as versatility on the defensive line, comparing the prospects just doesn't even out for me. I don't consider Darius Robinson to be the type of prospect, the caliber prospect that Powers Johnson is. I'm going with the center. I'm going with Powers Johnson in that situation. When I look at it for what it is, I can find impact help in the front seven on defense, mid rounds of the draft, later on in the draft. I can find those types of guys, those Darius Robinson guys later on in the draft. May not necessarily be his size or his type of versatility, but I think we've seen a lot of this before. And, you know, you look at Darius Robinson, he's a guy who 6'5", 285, has the body, has the frame, flashed the athleticism, really put it all together this season. And I just get like these Keon White feelings from him. You know, a guy who kind of was a high riser late, came on strong, has a lot of measurables, and people see a big ball of clay with it. And I think sometimes you can fall in love with that, and it just never materializes into what you envision. Even Tyree Wilson from a year ago. Like, I was a guy that was not really that high on him at all, but I understood people saw the athleticism, the size, the measurables and whatnot, and what they felt he could be. Now, he struggled with the Raiders for the most part of the season, got healthy, and played better as the season went on, but I just, in that situation, I'm going with the more established player, the better player, I believe, and that's Jackson Powers Johnson.
Yeah, I'm going Darius Robinson. Here's a couple of reasons why. I know a lot of people, you guys like Jackson Powers Johnson, and I like him too. All his stats, they grade out well. He did well at Oregon, obviously. But I look at Darius Robinson, and I look at him, and he had 18 pass win percentage, okay? So 18% pass win percentage is pretty high. Also, when I look at center in this draft, there's a lot of centers that are that could be available. And you were mentioning earlier about Graham Barton. Here's why I don't think Graham Barton or any guard would be on the table in the first round. Because I know that they have, I know that this franchise really values Kobe Soerstal. And I know that there are scouts out there that have said that when you draft a guy from like William and Mary or some smaller school, you basically got to give him a year to get right. So I know that the Lions are like, okay, they have high hopes in him. Do I think they're going to go after a guard? Yes. Maybe you go after a Zach Zenner who's already on like that kind of like he's going to be on that IR plan anyway. So you can kind of stash him for a while. But I just look at Darius Robinson and I look at that defensive line that they put together with DJ Reader and Aleem McNeil and Aiden Hutchinson. And then you add in a James Houston that's coming off the bench. I think that's better suited for this team because, look, if they don't get a cornerback in this draft, what's the one thing that helps out a pass defense? Pass rush. So if you can get a pass rusher like Darius, like him, you're going to be good. I think that they need to find another edge rusher to Aiden Hutchinson. They cannot rely on Marcus Davenport. I know there's a lot of Lions fans. I've heard them in the comments on my page, Detroit Lions News, that they're so excited about Marcus Davenport and maybe that he can reclimate to what he was a couple years ago, but he has to stay healthy. And you're asking James Houston, and then, you know, there's also Lions fans that want to draft Chop Robinson, which I said, what are they trying to build? A daycare center of defensive ends?
Yeah, no doubt.
You gotta go Darius Robinson, in my opinion.
Yeah, no doubt. I think it's interesting in regards to the edge rushers that maybe could be taken later on in the draft. You got to remember, 7 picks. I do think that Brad Holmes will be active, maybe get that third rounder that they don't have, in this year's draft. So I look at the prioritization of needs, and I'm wondering, is Brad Holmes willing to gamble on a wide receiver to make it elite? Would you go out and get a Keon Coleman, Leggett? Would you go out there and fortify a position of strength? And you've seen in terms of what Brad Holmes is willing and capable of, you saw that he traded up for Jameson Williams, made the move for Jahmyr Gibbs. You know he loves the Alabama talent. Who did he go out there to scout? Was it Kool-Aid McKinstry? Was it for Terrion Arnold? Was it for a wideout? So it's going to be fascinating to see if, you know, Brad Holmes rolls the dice on offense, even though, like you said, there are areas of need. And that's what he said clearly. He said, look, we go best player available. And he said, if you don't do that, you might miss out on the key word. He said, impact players. And there are some impact wideouts out there in the first round. So I wouldn't be surprised if he looked at wideout. So that's what's going to be interesting. And they've done just as much work on the wideouts as they have on the cornerback. So it's going to be interesting in that they both could be slotted either early or on day 2 or 3. So that's what's going to be fun, is to find out and discover what did he prioritize, which player did he end up valuing more. And we're going to start to get some of those clues this year. And you look at some of the opportunities that the Lions have to make trades. I think there might be even a realistic chance that, you know, similar to what Mike Fisher says, maybe he'll trade down, trade out of number 61, get more picks later on. So it'll be very fascinating to see how Brad Holmes approach the tenor of this draft. Are there any sleepers that you guys have paid attention to? I know on All Lions, my guy, my writer, really kind of surprised me a little bit, looked at and scouted the BYU offensive tackle in Kingsley. I'm going to butcher this. Kingsley Suamataya from BYU. He really found that, you know what, maybe the replacement for Taylor Decker needs to be targeted. Look, guys, I know it's a taboo subject in regards to Taylor Decker whenever any publication looks at his contract, but it was interesting. It was a blurb in a mock draft from the 33rd team, and I know that it wasn't a name writer. It wasn't somebody that has a big name, but he kind of said that, you know, there's whispers that $19 million cap hit for Taylor Decker could be looked at by the Lions. Now, I would be shocked if they did end up moving on from him or trading him, but at the same token, I wouldn't put it past Because remember what Brad Holmes said, don't be shocked at our decisions because we are looking for continuity. We're looking for the future. And Taylor Decker on the last year of his deal, I think he plays it out. I think that they don't move on from Taylor Decker this year, but you have to start to look at his replacement. So pay attention to that. Maybe a tackle that is potentially out there to protect Jared Goff in the future. Because you got to remember, if Jared Goff gets a 4 or 5 year extension, the most important position is his blind spot. And maybe you move Penei Sewell there and the guy's going to be a natural right tackle, but there could be a tackle on the board. There could be a tackle in the Lions' future in this year's draft.
Yeah, I agree with that. A tackle, yeah. Like I said earlier, you could rebuild your offensive line in this draft. You can get some guys that can come in and sit behind a veteran like Taylor Decker or one of the guards and then move up into a starting position next year. You look at that. I know it was a confusion. People were talking about, well, Taylor Decker's only got another year in his contract. No, 2025 is a void year. You know how Brad Holmes and his capologists, they structure those deals like that where they can go ahead and move on with that voided year. So I don't see them moving on from Taylor Decker this year, but you can draft a tackle. And I haven't really looked at some of the tackles down the line, but as far as day two or day three, but you could find a good tackle. The offensive line depth, like I said, in this draft is very deep. So you can find what you need in this draft as far as offensive linemen is concerned.
Yeah, so as far as depth is concerned with this draft, depends on what you're looking for. That's why I'm not really too big on taking a wide receiver in the first round. I think you can get a guy like Jamari Thrash, who's very Jared Goff friendly. To say the least, he's a guy that gets open consistently. One of the best route runners in this class. Performed really well at Jackson State before he transferred over to Louisville. Can run every route that you need him to run. Very solid at the point of attack when it comes to catching the football. He's good after the catch. He's almost a St. Brown clone. I just think he's more advanced as a route runner coming out than St. Brown was. So he's a guy that you can probably get early third round. And we move around the board. I think running back is also a position that if the quality is there, sixth round, maybe even the fifth round. Don't they have, two picks in the fifth, if I'm not mistaken?
Yeah.
So running back, to some fans may say, hey, you know, we got Jahmyr Gibbs. We spent the first round pick on him. We got Montgomery. Montgomery, if we're just being honest about the lifestyle of the NFL, Montgomery probably after 2024, maybe one more year here. Simply because you're talking about paying a lot of people. And in a lot of cases, running backs get hurt. They get cut in a lot of those types of situations. So, and I've said before, if it was up to me, considering the current state of how running backs get treated in the league, I would probably draft a running back late every year, if not every other year. Simply because it's cheap labor now. And that may sound horrible, but, you know, they get these young running backs fresh out of college. And I'm a big advocate, honestly, now with the way running backs get treated and the way the market is. As a running back coming out of college, you need to get out of college as soon as possible. Stay as healthy as you can. Get as few carries. Make sure by the time you get to the NFL is going to get the best years of your career, not college. The days, I believe, of running backs toting the football 500 carries a season in college is over with, especially if you consider the way these teams are using running backs by committee. So I think there is a lot of running backs deep in this draft that you put behind our offensive line. And that's the thing. We don't necessarily need a dynamic superstar generational talent. You can take a guy like Mayan Williams from Ohio State, who I actually like a lot, even though he's a Buckeye. But you know, Marshawn Lloyd of USC. Like, there's a lot of quality running backs, versatile guys that you can put behind this offensive line that those young guys will do the same thing. So if you're just thinking forward, you're talking about offensive line, of course, there's plenty of guard help. A guy like Cooper Beebe who could be there early third, maybe late second, depending on how these teams really start to feel about him throughout the entire draft process. But there's so much depth. There's so much depth to the point that you could get the number one safety in the class, honestly, at 29. or early second round. You know, and that pretty much comes down to the fact that they devalue safeties also. But like I said, you know, it's offensive line. There's plenty of depth, especially on the interior. Running back quality, I feel there's plenty of depth. Cornerbacks, defensive backs in general, the versatility, guys who can play corner and safety, it's just there. It's there this year. I felt last year the cornerback position should have been addressed. There was a lot of elite talent in last year's class. They decided to walk away from that draft with no corners at all, which I thought was strange. But this year, you need to go get it. There's plenty of guys, even Cooper DeJean, who I felt is really one of their type of guys. You're talking about a guy who can play, depending on what the matchup is, I believe he can play on the perimeter. Now, do I believe, can he run the gauntlet like Cam Sutton got put through the gauntlet of CeeDee Lamb and all these guys on a 6 to 7 week basis? No. But I do believe Cooper DeJean can match up on the outside against some receivers. I think he can play in the slot. I think he can play safety. I think he's a very smart football player, and he's their player. I honestly believe it. So it wouldn't shock me if he was a guy that went at 29 as well.
Yeah, Cooper DeJean also has a high RAS score, which we know that Brett Holmes loves the RAS scores to a T. You know, you mentioned wide receiver, John, and I'm going to tell you this right now. If they're going to trade up for any player in particular, it's going to be a wide receiver, and it's going to be – I would bet any money to be Brian Thomas, because my feeling about this is – and I know a lot of you guys are going, let's go cornerback. Well, I think that there's a lot of corners that could be had in the third, the fourth, the fifth round that could be really helpful. Like one of the guys that I look at with this draft is Josh Wallace from Michigan. You look at his stats and the teams that he's played, and his best games came against the best teams that he had on the schedule. That's pretty. Cam Hart from Notre Dame. I like Cam Hart a lot. I just feel like this is a draft where, and the Lions really need that X, Y receiver. And I know that, you know, Walter brought up Jamari Thrash. The problem with Jamari Thrash, he's got one of the worst contested catch rates in the draft. So he's not a contested catch kind of guy. He drops a lot of footballs. And I look at him and I go, no. I mean, if I'm going to go wide receiver, there's three wide receivers I have in my mind. It's Brian Thomas in the first round. It's Braden Bryce from USC. And I know Walter hates this guy because he calls him the drop man, but I really believe that DeVonta's Walker is one of those guys that could be a legit wide receiver that could be a threat. And a lot of people, they point to this year and they go, the reason he dropped a lot of footballs, part of that was because he came in at the in the middle of the season, and I don't think he was up to the standard. We've seen with Jameson Williams, it took him to the NFC Championship game before he finally started to get his legs, finally started to make some contested catches. You got to be in the football shape, and you got to play football to get in that kind of mode. And I felt like that's what happened to DeVonta's Walker. So when I look at this team, I look at the Lions, there's a lot of different ways they can go, obviously. But I think wide receiver, an X wide receiver, is their one of their bigger needs in this draft. I don't think they need a guy like Jamari Thrash. I don't think they need a guy like, you know, people bring up Keon Coleman, but his contested catch rate as a big guy is terrible. So, I mean, people can bring up Keon Coleman all they want. I like him as a player because he went to Michigan State and he played at Florida State, which I also like. But the contested catch rate for a big guy is not that great.
So Walt brought it up, and I'm very curious with the last topic that I'm available for before I have to head out. Walt said the name, and it's a very controversial name. I think that one in which it's going to potentially bear out regarding the position and the player that plays it. Cooper DeJean is very interesting. And we have to bring it up. There just aren't many successful white defensive backs. We have to bring it out there. I know we have to put it out there because that's one of the biggest knocks on the position, is that you don't see that too often. But there's a lot of factors that make him kind of an appealing target for the Lions. His versatility potentially to be on the new kickoffs. You know that he's got the relationship with Jack Campbell. He told me in the locker room when I asked about him, when Cooper DeJean made the plays in the Big Ten and throughout the year, I said, man, Cooper's a special teams wizard. He's like, John, he's like, Cooper DeJean's a dog. And he just had so much respect for his teammate. And I look at it and I say, this guy, a lot of intangibles. He's got a lot of things that Brett Holmes would like. I just would be more comfortable if it's between him and Kool-Aid McKinstry, I would just say Kool-Aid McKinstry because I think the upside's a little higher in regards to the ceiling. Now, I think Cooper DeJean's more ready to start right now than Kool-Aid. His Kool-Aid is, I think, a guy that, you know, still has some things to learn at NFL level. Look, he's a good college player. His tape will be impressive when you look at it. But when you talk about the adaptation to the league, I think that's a big, steep learning curve. And for a guy like Cooper DeJean, you can maybe put him in a slot. You can kind of do some things and have him more useful now than maybe a Kool-Aid McKinstry who you can stack away for a little later in the season. But to me, there's one player that would kind of make you have to dig a little bit and be a little concerned is that if the Lions draft Cooper DeJean. Is there anybody besides him that would make you concerned in the first round? But to me, I think Cooper DeJean is one name that you will hear tied to the Lions just based on what he brings to the table.
Right. Cooper, good player. And I think the last time was what, Jason Sehorn was the last time a white cornerback was drafted in the NFL. At least in the first round. Good player. I think that Kool-Aid's ceiling is higher at the pro level. I believe that you're right with the, as far as that DeJean is ready to start right now. I get that. But I think for me, I would take Kool-Aid just because I think his ceiling is higher at the pro level. What you got, Walt?
I think Cooper is a very, very polarizing and interesting prospect. Personally, I think he's a boom or bust player. I really do. I think he's athletic. He's very athletic. But when you look at like the fact that he didn't really play anybody from a wide receiver standpoint in the Big Ten this year, if you look at just going back in the film and watching him when he did have the opportunity to play in man coverage, he really seems to struggle, even though I don't care about what guys do in these drills, because what guys do in these drills don't always show up on the field. And when you watch him on the field, he kind of struggles to run and transition. We actually transition to run. He's kind of stiff. He's really yoked up, really thick body. It's like he reminds me a lot of Eric Weddle. And this is nothing wrong with it, because Eric Weddle turned out to be a damn good player for the Chargers for a long time. And I think Cooper's very scheme dependent. He has to go somewhere where they know how to use him and turn him into a weapon. But we also said that about Isaiah Simmons. Like, we've seen a lot of guys who are big time athletes that didn't really truly have any position mastered to the point that you could say coming out of the draft, okay, this is what this guy is. You know, you don't see a lot of those guys. You had the Isaiah Simmons. And to go back, I'm going to date myself a little bit here, but to go all the way back to even R.W. McCorders with the San Francisco 49ers, like these guys who are big-time athletes that didn't really have a position. And they tend to struggle when they get to the league trying to actually become something. That's why I've been a very big advocate of Travis Hunter at Colorado, of playing one position this year, and that's it. Because you can't go to the NFL and think you're just going to wing it and just learn some brand new position on the fly like that. There's examples of it, but it doesn't really happen that much. So, like I said, I like Cooper. I think he's very scheme dependent. I think anyone who looks at the film, who honestly looked at the film and walked away from it saying that he's the best corner in this class, is crazy. And they're being dishonest. Because, you know, it's when you look at it for what it is, some people have an agenda to push with him, and I get it, because I'm going to bring out the elephant in the room. And the fact is this, I think a lot of white people view Cooper DeJean the way black people view Lamar Jackson, in the sense that regardless of his deficiencies, I'm going to defend him because he's one of my own. And that's nothing, that's not saying anything negative towards black people or white people. I think it's an innate situation a lot of times where people naturally do that. Because I've been talking about Cooper DeJean on social media the past few days, and I never once called him a bad player. I never once called him a bad athlete. But if it seems as if you say anything about him that is not completely glowing, you get attacked by certain people. And it's really ridiculous. You know, because like you're not allowed to evaluate him the way you evaluate all of these other corners. And you know, you look at how people have brought up his athleticism, and if you compare his numbers to a lot of guys in his class, it kind of brings him back down to earth. But if you compare his numbers to Antrell Roll, or you compare his numbers to Steve Smith or Trent McDuffie, like guys who aren't really big-time explosive athletes, is going to look better. So I think when you look at, like, Quinyon Mitchell, I think he's clearly better. And you can say he played better talent. He at least played Ohio State. And then Nate Wiggins, I think, is also another dog out there. Enough versatility. That's my thing. When you get, same thing I felt with the NBA. If you got too many versatile guys, too many guys that can do different things, who the hell is the dog? Right. Who's the shot maker? Who's the guy out there? I want a number one corner. I had enough of versatility. We got versatility with Branch last year. We got versatility with Melifonwu. Can we get a legit damn corner that we've never had? A number one guy? Like, enough with the versatility stuff. We need a guy that we can change coverages and allow Aaron Glenn to do different things exotically with the secondary, with the real corner. I just, we've never had it. Even Darius Slay wasn't a first-round pick. Like, enough is enough with the versatile guy. He's a Swiss Army knife, and he works hard. He's a culture guy. Like, enough of that. Let's go get a real legit corner and stop playing around.
Okay, I feel you. What you got on that,
enough, Joe? Enough is enough, man. Let's be real about this, man. Enough is enough. We keep looking for okay guys. Like, well, like stop it.
I got news for you. None of these guys are going to be cornerback once, to be honest. Like, if you look at all these guys,
I disagree completely. I've seen,
there's only one or two guys that I see that could potentially be cornerback one guys. And that's a potential thing, and that's not going to happen right away because cornerback's one of the hardest positions to play. And the second part about it is being a defender now with the new tackle rules is stupid. So here's the thing. I look at Terrion Arnold. I think he's going to be a cornerback one. And I look at Quinyon Mitchell, and I look at those two guys, and I say that those are the two separators. That is it. Then you look at Cooper DeJean, and you look at Kool-Aid McKinstry, and you look at TJ Tampa from Iowa State, or Mikey Sanderstow from Michigan. Like, there's all these guys that they have certain things that they're good at, then they have certain things that they're not good at. And I know everyone's bringing up Cooper DeJean because he's white and everything like that, but, like, here's the thing about Cooper DeJean. I was reading the Raz. He was 28th out of, like, 3,000 cornerbacks since 1982. So he's 28th out of all those. So he's got the athletic ability. He's got the smarts as a cornerback that you would want because he only allowed two touchdowns at Iowa total, two touchdowns total in 3 years. I look at Cooper DeJean and I go, okay, if you put him in the right situation, he could obviously thrive. If you put him in a situation where he's asked to be the cornerback one, you're probably going to be in trouble. It's the same with things Kool-Aid McKinstry. If you ask him to be cornerback one, I can guarantee you this right now. You're going to be very disappointed. And all these fans that cried about Cam Sutton last year, it's going to be the same thing with these guys. People just got to face the facts. Cornerback wants the guys that are the elite guys in the cornerback position, they're very few and far between. You look at Kansas City, I mean, they got Trent McDuffie and they got L'Jarius Sneed, but they obviously went with Trent McDuffie and they didn't pay L'Jarius Sneed. Why? Because they can rush the passer. I think rushing the passer is more valuable than a corner. That's my opinion. And unless you're getting a guy like Patrick Surtain, unless you're getting a guy that you believe can be that cornerback number one, why does it matter where you draft him? You see what I'm trying to say? Like, if you draft him at 29, cool. What's the expectation for the kid?
I think there's only two, though. I mean, if you told me I can take two corners out of this class and put them on the island and I'm comfortable with them being my number ones, eventually, am I saying these dudes are going to be Champ Bailey or Charles Woodson from snap one? No. Everybody has their struggles. They're going to have struggles. All these corners have struggles. But it's not about what you start out as snap one. It's about what do you eventually become. And I think a guy like Terrion Arnold, the lack of athleticism showed up at the combine. And I think if people are being honest about it, if you go back and watch the LSU game, where this is how I view corners. What do you do against the best of the best and these high-end athletes? The level of athleticism was on display, and the discrepancy between the athleticism between Malik Nabers and Brian Thomas and Arnold was scary. Like, on the perimeter, he looked like he had no answer for those dudes. That's when I started thinking to myself, okay, you know what? Could he be a really good slot? He could. I like his change of direction skills. His size is somewhat slot corner-ish. But at the end of the day, you need elite athleticism on the perimeter. Now, when you look at the DK Metcalfs and the Legettes and the Brian Thomases of the world and the Xavier Worthies and the Jameson Williamses out there, even if you go back in history, all the top corners, not the slot guys, the Rondé Barbers of the world or the Santi Samuel guys, the number one corners on the outside were always big-time athletes. Mm-hmm. Even you go back to guys like Daryl Green, was he a big-time specimen? No. But Daryl Green was a big-time athlete. He was a freak. And right. You can get away with undersized and decent technique from the slot, but when they need you to go outside those numbers and defend these freaks, you need athleticism. That's why I went back and watched the Alabama-LSU game twice, and it was on display for me twice that if you're too dude for him, like too athletic, too physical, he can't handle that. Now, that doesn't mean Terrion Arnold can't be a solid slot corner, because when I compare him and McKinstry, I think McKinstry is a good football player. Mm-hmm. I think he's more equipped to play on the outside, even though it's not about the size difference, because he's bigger naturally than Terrion Arnold. But I believe McKinstry can actually develop and play on the outside. Now, Terrion Arnold, you can't just grow athleticism when you get to the league. Sometimes you can be as smart as you want to be. You can watch as much film as you want to watch. Sometimes you get typecast into a certain position, and I kind of think that's what Terrion Arnold is. And Quinyon Mitchell can play zone. He can play man. There's not too much he can do. He ran the 40 super fast. You saw him do everything he needed to do at the combine. When you go back, you watch the film. It's obvious that, to me, him and Nate Wiggins are two dudes. They're the guys that you can throw out there and guys that can play on the perimeter. Because at the end of the day, like I said, if you don't have the athleticism on the outside, that shit's going to get exposed. And you're going to eventually get moved to the outside. That's why even when people discuss Cooper DeJean, it's more so athlete, athlete, athlete. And smart, and smart, and smart. And like smart is always something that's, once again, but smart, smart and crafty. Smart and crafty are always two adjectives that are associated with white players, though.
Wait, you just brought up athleticism. You said athleticism is crucially important for the cornerback on the outside. That's what you just said.
So I'm not talking about just 40 times and just explosion numbers.
I'm not talking about 40 either. But you obviously need athleticism to be on the outside, correct?
Yes.
Okay, so Cooper DeJean is athletic. Nate Wiggins is athletic. So here's the thing. This goes back to my point. The reason, look at Terrion Arnold, one of his biggest flaws is he's grabby as hell. That's what the scouting reports say.
Because he's not athletic. Okay, non-athletes grab. that's what they do.
That's my effing point.
So what did you say you had him? QB, what, cornerback two or three or something? You had him as a QB one. And he's grabby because he's not athletic.
I think he's a football player. I don't think he's going to wow you with athleticism. I look at Terrion Arnold kind of like I look at like a Bradbury type. Like Bradbury is not athletic at all. He's kind of grabby. We know that by the Super Bowl, but he gets the job done. That's kind of what I view him as. Nate Wiggins is another guy who I love. But the problem with him is, and I think he could slip to the Lions with his combine injury, but we'll see. But I look at Quinyon Mitchell. Those are the three guys that I would say, okay, that's good. But the reason I wouldn't draft a cornerback in round one is because I think you were saying earlier that that we have to go get this guy. What guy is there? Is there a guy like Patrick Surtain in this thing? Is there a guy like that? Because I don't see it.
And let's be real. Like, we know who Pat is now, but people had a lot of doubts about. I didn't, but oh, he's an Alabama corner, and oh, you know, he's not good at man.
That's
there was a lot of doubt for Pat, you don't know until these guys get here to the league.
Well, my point is exactly this. You look at the two Super Bowl teams. Was there like a cornerback on that roster that you go out? You were like, "Yep, that's a dog." No, they both had pass rushes.
Well, look how those teams were built. Also, I mean, no. Well, what the Chiefs had? Look, McDuffie's a good player. He's a really good player, and so was Legarius Sneed. Now they didn't have a whole lot individually outside of Chris Jones. If you're talking about the front seven for that team, but. That's a very well coached defense with a really good defense coordinator.
They're aggressive. They're blitzing a lot.
They play pretty opportunistic.
But my point about it is this: you said you were going to the cornerback thing about how they need to go get a dog and everything like that, and I totally agree with you. But the problem is I don't see that guy in the draft, man. Like I don't see a guy in the draft that you go. Like I look at these cornerbacks coming out of college, and I feel like that they are. Their rules in college prohibit them from learning how to play NFL ball.
Let me ask you this. So what is your issue with Quinyon Mitchell then?
I like Quinyon Mitchell.
Would it be better if he had an A on his helmet?
No. See, I feel like Cooper DeJean and I feel like Quinyon Mitchell get this aspersion casted at them. Because they played at Toledo and because one of them played in Iowa at the Big Ten West, which Big Ten West is garbage, but we know how it is. I think they both get the same treatment, in my opinion. Because who'd you play? But then you look at Nate Wiggins and you go, okay, who did he play?
Yeah, you know I think sometimes you just look at the skill set. So like Nate Wiggins, when you watch Nate Wiggins play, even before he ran at the combine, I told people he was cracking 4.2. Like some guys on the field, you can see, like, there's not just, oh, he ran fast at the combine, but it doesn't show up on film. Now, my issue with Nate Wiggins is the size. You know, is he going to fill out some? Can he at least get the 190, maybe 195? But if you're talking about somebody that's a dog, like, we throw the word dog around a lot. If you're talking about a corner out there that plays with an attitude, that plays confident, that goes for the football, goes for the big plays, is willing to throw his body around and run support, can go out there, is fast enough to bait. Like, you can do so much with a guy that's athletic as Nate Wiggins. Now, we can keep going getting these nice little Jerry Jacobs guys or whatever, guys that are versatile, can do a bunch of stuff, but doesn't really specialize in anything at all. But, I mean, listen, there's been some misses on the specimens. I get it. You got a guy like CJ Henderson from Florida, 6'205", bench 400 pounds, ran 4.3, had 40 plus inch vertical, and turned out to be nothing. But you can say that about pretty much any position. You look at the last few guys who were considered to be the top corners, other than Kyer Elam that one year. What's his name from LSU? Derek Stingley. Stingley turned out to be a pretty good player. Sauce, he's turned out to be pretty good. For the most part, the guys who are deemed as the guys, the skill sets, the eye test can be wrong sometimes. But sometimes you can just get that feel and that vision with some of these dudes. Now, could I be completely wrong? And sure. I thought CJ Henderson was going to be a damn good player. Didn't turn out to be that way. For whatever reasons, I don't know. Some guys just don't translate to the NFL that well. But I'm just saying, it all depends on how you built. And if I'm just saying that 29, but if you're going to trade up, you want to make sure you're trading up for an elite talent. I don't think they're going to trade up for an edge rusher. I really don't. I'm with you. I think if they do trade up, it could be for a wide receiver. I think if
Jared Verse is on the board, I think they would think.
Well, him too. I'm glad you brought that up. I think he's a guy, high ceiling player, not high ceiling, but a high floor player. You know how people pretty much feel about those guys now. Hey, you know, he's a finished product. I don't like him and this and that. But he's a guy I think could step right in with what we have in place and be an 8-9 sack guy from year one.
The issue, you know, you brought up the corner, but I'm just going to go back to this for a minute. But my ideological thinking is, like, if you look at the cornerback position, I think it's getting kind of towed down by the way that the NFL calls the defense now. You know, like, I think that you look at the defense and I think it's more important to have a cornerback that can tackle well than be good in coverage. I think that's going to be the major thing. Like, going forward, I think that, like, you know, got like, I was, you know, we were talking with the Rams. There was a lot of yak yardage that they allowed in the Lions game. You know, we talk about, like, one of the reasons I did like Carlton Davis in that trade is low yak. Him and Jamel Dean, they did a damn good job. Now, their safety that they have, I'm forgetting his name. The safety.
Winfield.
He was elite. He was great. So is Brian Branch this year. But I think it's more important for a corner to tackle, to make that tackle when the guy catches the ball, more than being good in coverage, because I feel like this league is going so far where even if you just touch the wide receiver, they're going to call a pass interference. So that's my thinking with the cornerback position, to be honest.
No, it's strange. Oh, kind of strange, because if you look at the Lions defense from last year, the one glaring weakness was the pass coverage.
Yep.
And it was consistently one guy. You know, you got Keenan Allen with 11-plus catches and CDs. And now, at the end of the day, these teams they barely cracked 20 points against us, well, except for the Chargers. But I think we played defensively, played overall well, I felt. I thought that Aaron Glenn took a lot of – some heat was due, and some heat was just piling on, I felt. But I felt overall they played decent as a defense. If we – just think about where this defense could have ranked a year ago if we had better cornerback play. Let's say we did have a Patrick Surtain. Let's say they did trade for a Surtain at the deadline. I don't see Surtain getting fried like that for six straight weeks.
I think with this pass rush, because it was kind of limited, I thought outside of Lee McNeil and outside of Aiden Hutchinson, there was no pass rush to be available. So I feel like if you don't get pass rush on the quarterback, what it's going to do is the quarterback is going to just sit there back there all day. And he's going to – if you give a quarterback in this league 5 seconds to throw the ball, they're going to beat you every time. And if it's a CeeDee Lamb, he's going to get open earlier. If it's a Keenan Allen, he's a great route runner, he's going to get open earlier. That's why when you guys were talking about Darius Robinson,
if it's anybody against us, he's going to get open earlier. DJ Moore. It was a lot of guys. Let's not bring up JJ. Let's not even bring up JJ at all.
My point about it though is, like, I feel like the pass rush is more at fault than the cornerbacks, because I feel like late in the year they had to blitz to get a pass rush, which if you blitz quarterbacks, like good quarterbacks, they're going to burn you. Like, we were lucky that we in the playoffs that we played Stafford, which he's not a guy that can get outside the pocket, barely. Baker Mayfield, who's not good against – he's not good against the blitz. And then you had Brock Purdy, and Brock Purdy exploited them when they kind of moved him around in the second half. That's why I kind of go with this whole, you need someone that can rush the passer. That's the main thing. And it doesn't really have to be in the first round. You can go Jalen Harrell, who has a great pass rush win rate at, you know, Michigan.
Another Wolverine slappy.
No.
I'm joking.
I don't even like Michigan, but
I'm joking, man.
He's a dog. Here's the thing. When I look at these defensive ends, I look at their pass rush win rate, especially if they're in the SEC or the Big Ten or the Pac-12. Well, the Pac-12 doesn't exist after this year, but you get my drift. Like, any Big Ten, you know, conference, you look at them and you go, okay, this guy can rush a passer. He might not be good in run. His run grade might not be great, or his, you know, he might not be good against the run. But I could throw him out there in the pass, and he can go rush the passer. And that's what I look at with this, man. Like, I don't look at the corners. Like, I don't think you need a number one corner in this new era of NFL, in my opinion, with the new tackling rules, with the way they call
it. Well, it helps to have a really good corner. Can we agree on that? It helps to have a Darrell Revis. Like, I mean, it helps to have a really good corner.
Okay, you're building a team right now. Would you take a number one corner or a legit defensive end edge rusher?
Well, I mean, of course you're going to take the edge rusher. If we're talking about, okay, so you can argue in a vacuum who's the best corner. Not corner, right. But who's the best edge rusher? Is it Myles Garrett, Bosa, TJ right. Watt, whoever? Or do I want – who's the best corner in the league? A Ramsey or whoever, or Sauce or whatever. Of course, yeah. I'm going to take Myles Garrett. Yeah. Of course, I'm going to take TJ Watt, because those sacks, I understand what the corner does in coverage, but I think it all comes down to how you're built as a team. Now, for us, unless we're going to get somebody that can really get after the quarterback, it's going to be hard. But you still need guys out there that can cover. Now, heading into 2024, we got Carlton Davis. We expect him to be an upgrade and play better for us than what we had a year ago. They brought back Vildor, who I actually thought played decent for us, but he's just remembered by the face mask. Blown play, and it's bad because he actually played decent. He had some decent games for us, but that's what he's going to be remembered for. But Amik Robertson. So, yeah, you know, we got guys that can help out, but I still think it helps if you can have that number one corner. And to go back to a few segments ago when we were discussing Jackson Powers Johnson or Darius Robinson, it just feels like to me when you look at the hit rate and bust rate on those type of edge rushers, those supersized guys we saw, not to say he's a bust, but Mike Morris from Michigan a year ago, Keon White, like those guys. I think we still good. Fall in love. We fall in love with those supersized edge rushers. Nah, I think a lot. The guy who's 6'5", 295, and can play some 3-tech and play some 5, whatever. I just think we've seen so many of those guys. Now, if we look at the hit rate on the centers, the last 5 to 6, 7 centers that have been drafted in the first round, aside from Cesar Ruiz, and you can argue how you feel about Cam Irving, who went to Cleveland. Aside from those two guys right there, you're talking about Linderbaum, you're talking about Ragnow, Bradberry, who was pretty good for the Minnesota Vikings. The miss rate on those centers in the first round isn't really that low. I just think that we've seen so many Darius Robinsons before. And then you look at the age, the amount of time he played. If I have the ability to get the elite prospect, me and myself, I have to go and get it. And it's not the sexy pick at all. But I think you were talking about investing money in golf. You want to make sure, aside from Penei Sewell, that you have that offensive line intact completely. That's why I kept bringing up the fact that offensive line could be 2 of the first 3 picks. Because that level of talent could still be there. Now, we don't know how they feel about Mahogany from Boston College or Chris Haynes from UConn, Cooper Beebe from Kansas State. We don't know. We don't know if they feel Bo Limmer can play guard, for all we know. So there's so much talent there. And the miss rate on a lot of these players lately just isn't the way it is when it comes to these edge rushers. Not to say that Robinson can't do it.
No, the reason I look at Darius Robinson is there's a couple of things. Number one, I think when you look at a defensive end, you have to put it into the team that you got. So I look at a team like with Detroit, with DJ Reader, who's going to take blocks away. Look at a guy like Elie McNeil, who's going to take blocks away. I think that you would literally put Darius Robinson one-on-one, and can he win that one-on-one matchup? I think he can. I think it's a fit. And if this guy gets me 8-9 sacks and he allows, you know, Hutch to get free or Aleem to get free, I mean, that's what I think that is the most kind of the best way to go about it. Because I know Jackson Powers Johnson is a great player. I love Jackson Powers Johnson. The issue I have with it is I think there are some centers that can be had late in the draft.
Zach Frazier.
Yeah, like, you know, you got like the kid from Wisconsin, Bolini or whatever his name is. I like him. I like the kid from NC State. I think he could be polished a little bit. I just look at some of these guys and I go, there's definitely some. And if Brett Holmes wants to go best player available, you know, if he wants to go that best player available, I think late in the draft he can go after those guys like with a need. And maybe Jackson Powers Johnson is his best available, or maybe it's Darius Robinson. But I just think you look at this team and you go, okay, who can I put next to DJ Reader? Because that's the side that he'd be playing on. And how would it work, you know? And everyone brings up Chop Robinson, but I've said for
– no.
Okay, well, here's the problem, Walt. These people are falling in love with Chop Robinson. They fall in love with Chop Robinson.
And he was on the freaks list.
Well, I said on my podcast a week ago, I said, what you trying to do? Raise a daycare of short defensive ends? You know, or undersized? You know, like Houston, he's a smaller defensive end. You don't need another smaller defensive end. Like, you already got one. You know, usually these teams in the NFL, they have one of those undersized defensive ends. You don't need two. Like we saw with James Houston, it happened to James Houston in that 49ers game. Trent Williams put him in a headlock. And
well, that's the thing. We honestly don't know about Houston. I think a lot of us as fans are still living off hope, envisioning what we saw those final handful of games a year ago. Like, he's got a lot to prove when he comes back. And Houston's not enough for me to pass on an undersized. Well, I don't view Dallas Turner as an undersized edge rusher.
I think he's a different type of edge rusher. But I think the reason I like Darius Robinson is I feel like with all that beef that you have between Reeder and McNeil and Robinson, I feel like there's teams that are going to leave. They're gonna have to leave someone one-on-one with the, you know, if Hutch one-on-one or Aleem or DJ, like they're going to get to the passer. So Darius Robinson, his pass rush win rate was like 18%. His best games came against some of the best tackles in that conference, which is SEC. I just feel like that's a good pick. Like, I think that a lot of people, they look at the big size and they go, yeah, that's what I like. That's the old school defensive.
He's a Hall of Famer. Yeah.
But it doesn't have to be like that. It's the right fit, kind of like.
No, I get it. I don't think at 29 there's too many. I just feel like as a fan, you can't sit there and say right now at 29 there's a bad direction to go.
No.
Like, they could see anything. They could see and we haven't spoke about this because safety is a need. They have the ability at 29 if they choose to. We know that Tyler Newbin from Minnesota's met with Green Bay multiple times now. I had him actually mock the Green Bay a few weeks ago. 6'2", 212, really fast safety. Can play some cover one, can play cover three. Very smart, very opportunistic, ball skills. Like, he's kind of that Darren Sharper. I don't want to go Ed Reed, but he's sort of that Darren Sharper before we found out the truth. But he's sort of that Darren Sharper.
We're gonna talk about
that. He's the good Darren Sharper. He's sort of that good Darren Sharper, that guy who was just a ball magnet. Yeah. I remember watching Darren Sharper as a Lions fan when he first came, his first preseason game in Green Bay, and this dude was dropping interceptions left and right. And I'm like, this dude gonna be special because he was always around the football. And that's kind of like what I see with Tyler Newbin. I think a guy like Newbin is an option because depending on what you want to do with Joseph may not play up to snuff this season. He may play up to snuff enough, but you may not want to break the bank for him.
Mm-hmm.
A guy like Newbin enables you to do a whole lot. You can actually keep Branch at nickel. Carlton is good where he's at. Now, what are you going to do as the number two corner? You know, Sutton's gone, so we still have that up in the air. I'm not sure Amik Robinson is my number two. But I just think a guy like him could be – he can be that guy on the back end that changes games and really erases things for you. And – that helps too. I'm a firm believer in building the defense. You still need at least one game changer at all three levels, mm-hmm. whether it's a corner or a safety. Theoretically, you will like that. You will like someone in the secondary that can make game changing plays. You want a linebacker or an edge rusher, depending on whether you're a 3-4 or 4-3 or whatever. And you want typically someone on the defensive line that can wreck games, whether it's a game wrecking nose tackle, a 3-tech, or an edge rusher. And I don't think there's any bad directions they can go unless they took Michael Penix or Bo Nix or something like that, or took another damn tight end. Brock Bowers. Like this is what I'm saying, because we've heard the Brock Bowers rumors over the past week or so.
Me and you would have went at it because I was saying on the podcast a week ago, if Brock Bowers got the 21, would you trade up and do it?
Who else is on the board?
I think I would because
him and Brian Thomas are both on the board.
Give me Brock Bowers.
You said we need an X. You lie.
Well, here's my thinking around this. Okay, so people look at Brock Bowers. I think Brock Bowers is going to be like an elite tight end. I really do.
We got one.
But here's the thing: with his new tackling rules, you can't tackle these guys the same as you used to. So if I got two of those big guys, what the hell are you going to do? I got St. Brown coming through the slot. I got J-Mo running a fly route. I got Gibbs coming out of the backfield. We know they ran the two tight end sets the most in the NFL. So I was like, why not? Like, why not? If he's the best player available, go ahead. Fine, I'm good with it. But, like, I just, man, you can go. I think the Lions can go any way in this draft. I really do. Like, even like a Peyton Wilson, the kid from NC State, I think he could be on the board. I think that you could use someone like him. I'm kind of intrigued by this. Well, I didn't like some of his film, but TJ Tampa from Iowa State. He's a tall, he's 6'2", 200 pounds. So he's that, you know, he's that big corner that you was talking about. But I just feel like, I feel like he's got unhidden talent. You know what I'm saying? Because he went to Iowa State. I think a lot of people overlook Iowa State as like some, like, you know.
Now, they put a decent amount of guys in the NFL.
You know, Purdy was one of them.
Wasn't Will McDonald? He was a first-round pick last year, too.
Montgomery was one of them. You know, they got some dogs over there.
Wide receivers.
Yeah,
defensive tackle.
Kohler, from the tight end, was there from there. They had a couple defensive players, but they never really panned out. But one thing I didn't like about TJ Tampa is he does get turned around a lot. But it is what it is. But I do like the one cornerback that I do like, though. It's Mikey Sanders, so I do think Sanders is gonna be the guy, man. I do think he's gonna be a good dude.
Are there any Spartans even in the draft, man?
No. Next year, probably. Yeah, next year.
All right, Darcy, let's wrap this up.
Next year, you probably got that center coming out. That the center that transferred over there.
I'm with all my garb here. I'm usually looking to find. I'm always the best looking podcaster.
You cut your hair. It's different now.
They said I look like 20 years younger. So
yeah, now you look like Darcy the executive. You know, like you
there
don't
you
even.
Go. There you go.
I like Darcy the catcher singer better.
So we're at 45 viewers. This is kind of a record. We got two comments here. I'm the producer. Joe and I have known each other for like 11 years. He was a little snot-nosed kid, jumping over the in Allen Park and going through the fence. And Joe, I love it. You've done so well. You're at 76,000 followers. I've been doing the show. This is the third episode. Walter Stringer is going to be in. Where's the draft or the Super Bowl again? Sorry, I'm not used to having this on here. Can't hear myself.
Next year's Super Bowl, or are you talking about the actual NFL draft?
No. Next year's Super Bowl. It's in the Saints, New Orleans. I predict that Walter's going to be there. Thanks for everybody watching the show. It's been great. We've had Glover Quinn on. We've had 9 former players on. Joe is on. He's always first, and Walter is the best. I love you guys. What the hell? Don't you love me back or no?
Yeah, we do. We do.
Oh, yeah.
Welcome to the Detroit Lions News Show, your number one source for Detroit Lions news.
But when I see Dan Campbell handling the clock the way he has,